Okay, so hi. I will have to go back now because for 6 minutes it was reduced. So we are now looking at the different methods of approaching the subject of spirit. These are facts to be grasped. And let's see here. All right. Okay, a few little technical problems there. But we were looking here at facts to be grasped in approaching the subject of spirit. So we're actually beginning Cosmic Fire Webinar Commentary number 15A. The first thing is to the impossibility, really, of human beings thinking meaningfully outside of the cosmic physical plane into the formless worlds, because on these higher planes, it seems that form as we know it is negated. Regarding the second fact that's coming up, all forms and natures are symbols. See, even some of the highest Daihan Chohans in our solar system are not capable of thinking meaningfully in terms of the cosmic astral plane. That seems to be something that we are told here. Well, we have been told that. We just have to let that go. It's all here in the previous program. Sometimes when there is a technical mistake, it kind of throws me for a little while here. But we're going to move on to the idea of symbolism. And it says here that the wise student will likewise regard all forms of expression as in the nature of symbols. A symbol has three interpretations. It is itself an expression of an idea, and that idea has behind it a purpose inconceivable as yet. So there is an idea or concept behind the veiling the purpose, and there is an exoteric symbol veiling the idea. Okay. Now, because the symbol is always pointing to something or embodying something which is not on its own level, but higher than it is. So we will look now at three ways of interpreting a symbol. And it might be considered in the following way, we are told. So the exoteric interpretation of the symbol is based largely upon its objective utility, its usefulness in the dimension in which it appears, and upon the nature of the form, so that the description of the form is required and the use of the symbol is indicated. Description of the form, often in terms of shape, color, number, those kinds of things, and the use. So the description of the form and the use of the form. That which is exoteric and substantial serves two purposes. Okay. The first, to give some faint indication as to the idea or concept behind the symbol. This links the symbol in its exoteric nature with the mental plane, but does not release it from the three worlds. And there always is a way to release the symbol from the three worlds. The use of the word idea here, this use of the term idea, is pretty well here equivalent to concept. This links the symbol in its exoteric nature with the mental plane, but does not release it from the three worlds of human appreciation. It seems to suggest that the term, the act of appreciation does not really exist with respect to the cosmic ethers for most human beings. The idea is as far as we get, the idea or the mental concept. Pretty well equivalent to concept or mental concept. But we can actually go beyond that. Right. Put this back here. Right. Or mental concept. This links the symbol to its exoteric nature with the mental plane, but does not release it from the three worlds of appreciation, i.e., into the cosmic ethers. The term thought can well relate to the three worlds, lower worlds, but the term idea, perhaps, should be focused in the cosmic ethers. At least he often discriminates between idea and thought in that particular way. But as it stands now, he's using these pretty well as equivalent terms, idea and thought. And also the second purpose of the exoteric symbol, so to indicate that which is above is the first purpose, and the second thing is to confine, limit or confine, or imprison the idea and so adapt it to the point of evolution which the solar logos and planetary logos and man have reached. Because the full expression of the idea will be limited by that point in evolution. The true nature of the latent idea is ever more potent, complete, full than the form or symbol through which it is seeking expression. And the ultimate of this is the boundless, immutable principle cannot be expressed fully through any universe. Never. In other words, infinitude, or the infinity of infinities, the infinity of all infinities cannot be expressed through any finitude, and all universes are finitudes. Matter is but a symbol of the central energy. Forms of all kinds and all kingdoms of nature and the manifested sheaths in their widest connotation and totality are only symbols of life. So what that life may be remains as yet a mystery. So we have to practice what's called spiritual reading or spiritual discernment to move from the exoteric symbol to the idea concept, and thence to the purpose behind it. And I think many of us, we do practice, you know, when we look at a lamp, it's an exoteric thing, it has utility in our three lower worlds. The idea behind it is to bring illumination. It is about illumination, but what is the purpose of illumination in the deeper sense? That is more difficult to grasp. Anyway, this exoteric symbol points towards the illuminative faculty, or light in general. What may light be doing with respect to our planetary logos or solar logos? That is altogether a deeper question. These exoteric symbols, symbolic forms, are of many kinds and serve many purposes, and this is largely responsible for the confusion in the minds of men on these matters. So all symbols are emanating from three groups of creators, at least in our local system, and beyond, of course, but at least it's in terms of what we can understand from the solar logos, the planetary logos, and man. The solar logos is constructing a temple in heaven, not made with hands. This is all directed by the thought power of the solar logos. Though this solar systemic temple is not yet completed, it's only half done perhaps, and it is a symbol of the quality of the solar logos and the life of the solar logos. When we're talking about the concept or idea suggests quality. Whereas the life of the symbol, or the purpose of the symbol, suggests life. The planetary logoi, who in their seven groups, seven groups as far as the seven solar systems, of which ours is one, because there are seven groups of planetary logoi, apparently. I'm not sure whether all of these stars have planetary factors, planetary logoi in them, but in many ways, it seems to be the case. At least, although we have not explored these things with our own telescopes, the ageless wisdom seems to point to that that fact. So the planetary logoi in their seven groups create through seven ways and methods, and thus produce a diversity of symbols, and are responsible for concretion. I think we find more concretion from arising from the creative powers of a planetary logos than from the creative powers of a solar logos, a more abstract being. The planetary logoi, who in their seven groups create through seven ways and methods. See, because in our particular solar system, we do not have seven groups of planetary logoi. But in the seven solar systems of which ours is one, we do have seven groups, and these are mentioned in the paragraph about the solar petries in their groups, in groups becoming seven groups of planetary logoi. Okay, and man who builds, forms, and creates symbols in his work of every day, but who as yet works blindly and yet unconsciously, he does not understand that he is creating symbols or the ideas, concepts, towards which they point. I was just thinking towards which. I was thinking about the idea of, you know, like sometimes you have, like, let's say you squeeze some orange juice and then you want to pour the orange juice through a strainer, which will collect the seeds and the pulp if you don't eat it. You know, you might, but let's just suppose it's just orange juice and seeds. So it collects the seeds. The idea is purification. That's the concept. Or somehow purity or homogeneity. That's the concept. And then what is the purpose of homogeneity or purification? Ultimately, homogeneity leads to pure being, the realization of pure being. The purpose of the general quality of purity has to do with the degree to which the divine archetype can express itself. When there is purity in the lower forms, there can be alignment and expression. So the purpose of purification, we might say, is the communication of God with the lower worlds. And God can't get through unless there is purification. So the old saying goes, you know, cleanliness is next to godliness. And it has a very occult basis. So here is man, and he's creating symbols in his work of every day. Everything that he makes and every thought he thinks is in a way a symbol. Nevertheless, he merits the name of creator because he utilizes the faculty of mind and employs the rational quality. So let's just say creating is assembling according to an ideation. And this assembling necessitates mind. Emotion alone won't do it. Alone won't do this, nor will random action on the physical plane. you might get some kind of combination, but it wouldn't be considered creative. It would be considered a happenstance combination with no rationality to it. All right, so there are three groups. There are three groups of creators, and they all use the mind. They all create symbols which point to the quality which is to be embodied in the symbol and point to a purpose for the exercise of those qualities. The lesser devas and all subhuman entities and all those builders who must in some distant future pass through the human state of consciousness are not regarded as creators. Now, I just have to pause here. Watch this. This human state can be acquired in the Deva kingdom. The many, many devas that there are, far more than human beings, need not necessarily pass into the human kingdom in order to achieve this human state. So the devas need not pass into the human kingdom in order to achieve that state of their state of individuality, which is the result of individualization. There are other ways for the devas to individualize. Okay, so they're not regarded as creators, even though they might throw something together. We learn of the attempt to create man before the rational and intelligent solar angels entered the process. And all kinds of monstrosities and monstrous combinations resulted. This was not creativity, according to the Tibetan. These lower agencies, work under impulses emanating from the other three groups. In each of these three groups is free within certain specified limits. So if you are directed to create, it's like that, really. If you are directed to create, it does not mean that you are a creator. In that sense, we think about man as he existed in the Atlantean period, largely unintelligent and following the guidance of a very intelligent god kings and others who had long ago been human or who had reached a very high stage relatively. The solar angels embodied the god kings came, and the Atlanteans were not necessarily creative, at least not in the degree to which we give them credit. They simply carried out the higher impression. They carried out the design which was impressed upon them. Sometimes when people receive a design and then they use their hands to manifest it and their mind to govern the combination, we call them creative, but let's just say it to be really creative, it helps to meditate that impression yourself, to bring it into focus of your own will and volition, and then to express it in the next lower phase. So if you are simply an agent of creativity, you are not necessarily creative. You are an agent of a creator, or an agent of creativity. You are not in this sense creative. Okay. Now we've looked at the exoteric interpretation of the symbol, correct? And now we will look at what's called the subjective interpretation. It's one that reveals the idea or concept lying behind the objective manifestation, and we've decided it reveals a quality. This idea, incorporeal in itself, yes, if on the cosmic etheric planes and not equivalent, to a concept, becomes a concretion on the plane of objectivity, and as stated above, an idea lies behind every form without exception, and no matter which group of creators is responsible for its construction. And I want to say that even a randomly conglomerated factors, these ideas become apparent to the student after he has entered the hall of learning. He's unfolding the love petals, who is as yet in the hall, just as the exoteric form of the symbol is all that is noted by man who is as yet in the hall of ignorance. So this is strict literal-mindedness. There is no entry into the world of meaning. As soon as man begins to use his mental apparatus and has made even a small contact with his ego, three things occur. He reaches out beyond the form and seeks to account for it. You know, how and why did it come into existence? Does it represent anything? B, he arrives in time at the soul which every form veils, and this he does through knowledge of his own soul. So what we can do for ourselves, eventually we can detect in others. He begins then himself to formulate ideas in an occult sense of the term, and to create and make manifest that soul energy or substance which he finds he can manipulate. So, yes, he is working subjectively, but perhaps with purpose. So let's see. Let's look at this again. There is the subjective interpretation. It is one that reveals the idea lying behind the objective manifestation. We're calling this as well the quality. This idea, incorporeal in itself, we're told about ideas as incorporeal beings, and here we're not just looking at this as a more concrete concept. The term idea now has been applied in two senses. It becomes a concretion on the plane of objectivity, and we might call this, from the planetary logoic standpoint, the lower 18 subplanes. It becomes a concretion on the plane of objectivity. An idea lies behind every form without exception, no matter what group of creators is responsible for its construction. Well, sometimes it's very, very dimly and distortedly expressed. Like I say, you know, what kind of idea is there to random conglomerations? These ideas become apparent to the student after he has entered the hall of learning. That's the organizing, stimulating, unfolding, and opening the love petals. Just as the exoteric form of the symbol is all that is noted by man who is as yet in the hall of ignorance. You know, some people read the Bible or any scripture with a very literal mind, don't they? God has a long white beard and sits on a throne just the way an elderly human being would. It's impossible for them to think in abstract terms. As soon as a man begins to use his mental apparatus and has made even a small contact with his ego, three things occur. So he, beyond the form, he says, this form must mean something. Does it represent anything? He begins to enter the world of meaning. Begins to enter the world of meaning. Then he arrives in time at the soul, which every form veils. So there is a kind of a inner quality or pattern of energies or type of consciousness. And he understands that this exists within himself, and so he begins to detect it in other human beings, and also he detects quality in other beings. Mm-hmm. In other beings, okay. And then he begins then himself to formulate ideas. Now this is, he is becoming PCMG, a creator. So he begins to formulate ideas in the occult sense of the term and to create and make manifest that soul energy or substance which he finds he can manipulate. Let's remember that the third ray, ray three, is the ray of creative intelligence. The ray of creative intelligence. And creativity involves manipulation, which is literally the arranging with the hand. So, when egoic contact occurs, these things result. Entering the world of meaning, detecting through spiritual discernment, arrives in time, and I'm going to call this through spiritual reading and spiritual discernment. Spiritual and discernment, the soul or quality which every form veils. The soul or quality which every form veils. And you know, as we try to discover the soul ray of another person, we are searching for their quality, for the type of consciousness they have. We're doing this all the time because we have begun to reach toward the soul. And he begins then himself to formulate ideas. He becomes the creator. To train people to work in mental matter is to train them to create. The throat center, ruled by the third ray, is creative. To teach people to know the nature of the soul is to put them in conscious touch with the subjective side of manifestation. I think I'll try to make this a little subjective side of manifestation, and to put into their hands the power to work with soul energy. To enable people to unfold the potencies of the soul aspect is to put them en rapport with the forces and energies hidden in the Akasha and the Anima Mundi. Okay, the soul of the world and also the Akasha in a broader and more general sense. The technical idea of Akasha is the matter of the monadic plane, or the energy, the substance energy. Akasha, technically, is the substance energy of the monadic plane. So I'm not sure that he means that here. It's forces and hidden energies. I think by Akasha we just mean the substance of the planes. DK, in this context, Akasha seems to mean the substance of the planes. So if we train people to work in mental matter, they can move thought around, arrange and rearrange thought, and hence arrange and rearrange matter into useful rational combinations. And to teach people the nature of the soul is to put them in conscious touch with subjectivity and the power to work with soul energy, recognizing it. Okay, RCZ. RCZZ. Let's see if that works. Okay. Recognizing it and evoking it, or recognizing it in others and evoking it. And to enable people to unfold the potencies of the soul is to put them en rapport with the energies of matter and the consciousness of matter. So, rapport with the energies of matter and the consciousness of matter. Consciousness behind matter. As man can then, as his soul contact and his subjective perception is strengthened and developed, a man can then become a conscious creator, cooperating with the plans of the hierarchy of adepts who work with ideas. The true formative energies of the cosmic etheric planes, and who seek to bring these ideas, planetary ideas, into manifestation upon the physical plane. These ideas related to the divine plan into manifestation on the physical plane. As he passes through the different grades of the hall of learning, his ability so to work and his capacity to get at the thought lying behind the symbols increases. So his ability to do spiritual reading increases. His spiritual reading capacity increases, and his spiritual discernment, how to detect the quality or idea behind the form. He is no longer taken in by appearance, this is so important, but knows it as the illusory form which veils and imprisons some thought. And we have a lot of sayings in the human race. We say that beauty is only skin deep, and you can't tell a book by its cover. You can't tell a book by its cover, and beauty is only skin deep. This already shows that people are beginning to think more deeply about the quality which lies behind the appearance. But of course, sometimes there is an inconsistency between the inner quality and the outer appearance, but oftentimes, if one is not just superficial in looking at the outer appearance, one can in fact see how the appearance does reflect the inner quality. But then one has to read the appearance. One must learn to read the appearance instead of just being, as DK says here, taken in by that appearance. Okay, and then so that was a discussion of the subjective interpretation of the symbol. We've had the exoteric interpretation, the subjective interpretation, which allows one to begin to detect the quality behind and to detect the soul, to detect the soul of the symbol, to detect the soul of the symbol, which means quality and idea, and then to become a creator himself. Now we're going to look for the third type of creation. What is then the spiritual meaning which lies behind the subjective sense and which is veiled by the idea or thought, just as the idea itself is veiled by the form which it assumes in exoteric manifestation? This can be regarded as the purpose which prompted the idea and led to its emanation into the world of form. So the spiritual meaning then is about the purpose which impelled the idea. It is the central dynamic energy which is responsive for the subjective activity. So this is life as it is responsible for the appearance of quality. Life, quality, appearance. I think, you know, the three factors, of course, D.K. here is writing in A Treatise on White Magic, but the life, quality, appearance sequence was developed more when he began the treatise on the seven rays, but he's already strongly hinting at it, I think we can see. So spiritual meaning is connected with purpose, which is the configuration behind the idea. In other words, the purpose is to achieve a configuration with certain qualities within it. So these qualities are representing a deeper purpose, and a deeper purpose may actually be the impulsive force or propelling force behind a number of qualities or a number of ideas. I think what I want to say here is, there are orders of purposes. And one purpose may be behind one quality or idea, but also one purpose may be behind many related qualities or ideas. So it's a hierarchical structure. I see what we have to do. Structure. For instance, the idea or the purpose to manifest the good may include many forms of related ideas and work out in many tangible expressions. So there's a hierarchy of purposes. And to consider or remember a hierarchy of purposes. All right, we've had three types of interpretation. Now, three ways that a symbol can be interpreted exoterically, subjectively, and spiritually. Interpretation of a symbol exoterically and subjectively, which is really in a way esoterically, but subjectively and spiritually. Maybe there is where we should put esoterically. And the idea here is appearance, quality, life. These three aspects of a symbol can be studied in connection with all of atomic forms. There is, for instance, that unit of energy which we call the atom of the physicist or chemist. It has itself a form which is the symbol of the energy which produces it. This form of the atom is its exoteric manifestation, this form. There are likewise those atomic aspects which we call, for lack of better term, and probably there are better terms, electrons. These electrons are largely responsible for the quality of any particular atom, just as the soul of man is responsible for his peculiar nature. They represent the subjective aspect of life. This is really interesting. The electron here is related to quality. I might not have suspected that, but in the differing number of electrons, the quality of an atom is revealed, but also in the different number of neutrons and protons as well. Okay. Differing. Let's do that one too. Right. Differing. So, the electrons are accounting for quality. Now, what does he say? Then, finally, there is the positive aspect, the energy responsible for the coherence of the whole and for the uniformity of the dual manifestation, exoteric and subjective. And is he talking here about the proton? Is he here speaking of the proton? This is analogous to the spiritual meaning, and who can read that meaning? Or is this the central hierarchical life? As in the members of the seventh creative hierarchy, which are the life of the atom. So maybe it is more that. In terms of structure, there is a coordination between protons, electrons, and also neutrons. These are all determining the pretty much the orbits of the atom and the atomic number and weight of the atom. There are various ways that physicists and chemists go about describing the atom, but they still seem to be in the realm of quality. The whole form of the atom appears to be exoteric. It is a form, the symbol, which is the symbol of the energy which produces it. But here, the form is being considered as a whole, and the different and differing parts are not examined. So the form of the atom is this exoteric manifestation, but those atomic aspects, which we call electrons, and yet there are also protons and neutrons as well. And I'm going to ask that, should not protons and neutrons be included as well? Anyway, these electrons are largely responsible, and maybe not wholly, and we've gone much farther into atomic structure so far at today than when this was written. They're largely responsible for the quality of any particular atom, just as the soul of a man is responsible for his peculiar nature. But usually, and this is what's strange here, usually the electron is related to the third aspect of divinity and not to the qualitative aspect. Anyway, they are representing the subjective aspect or life. Then finally, there is the positive aspect or energy responsible for the coherence of the whole and for the uniformity. Now, when he uses a word like coherence, think etheric, because the vital body is the provides the factor of coherence, and when it is extracted at death, coherence of the physical body disappears. So then finally there's the positive aspect, the energy responsible for the coherence of the whole and for the uniformity of the dual manifestation, exoteric and subjective. And so we have the appearance, the subjective quality, made up of various aspects of the atom, and then the sponsoring creative hierarchy, which is the vitality behind and substanding the atom. So this is done by the lives, I believe, of the seventh creative hierarchy. Maybe it'll be a little easier to understand what happens in the case of man. In man, likewise, the human atom, these three aspects are found, which would be the exoteric, subjective, and spiritual. Just reminding, exoteric, subjective, and spiritual. Man on the physical plane is the exoteric symbol of an inner subjective idea which is possessed of quality and attributes and a form through which it seeks expression. So the form is the result of the aggregated qualities on which the form is built. That soul, in its turn, is the result, and notice he equates here quality, attributes with soul. That soul, in its turn, is the result of the spiritual impulse. But who shall say what that spiritual impulse is? This has to do with, in a way, monadic destiny and the final configuration into which man is to be patterned or built. But of course, there are purposes in time. And there are temporal consummations. As a matter of fact, is a consummation anything but temporal? There are various temporal consummations along the way to the final consummation. So who shall say what that impulse is? It's a spiritual impulse. It seems to be a monadic impulse. Who as yet shall define the purpose behind the soul or idea, whether logoic or human? You know, how far does the vision extend? Sorry. Indicating a purposeful configuration at certain to emerge at certain junctures of time. So all these factors are as yet in process of evolution. All are as yet imperfect gods. So the outer form is in process of evolution. The subjective qualities are ever-changing. And maybe, as I say, and there are temporal purposes, temporary consummations, temporary configurations. Purpose, consummation, configuration. Purpose, configuration, consummation. All these three factors are yet in process of evolution. All are as yet imperfect gods, each in their degree and therefore unable to express fully that which is the spiritual factor lying behind the conscious soul. Well, the question is the spiritual factor also in process of evolution? Because that spiritual factor could be being itself. But if it is the purpose through which being expresses, then there can be evolving purposes. It's quite easy to see how the form will change its shape, how the qualities of a man change. We're always changing our rays, always changing our astrology. The qualitative nature of the personality, which is the egoic lotus, is always changing its shape and configuration and the values inherent. So those two are always changing. And the patterns in which these qualities and are to appear, and the patterns in which the exoteric symbols are to appear, are changing as well. In other words, we get to the point here, we say, do archetypes change? Well, there is an hierarchical series of archetypes. And different ones are at work at different times. So there are lesser archetypes and greater. And the greater include the lesser. We may be working at a certain type of patterning right now, which is the result of an archetype held at a relatively lower level. Once that is achieved, it has to give way to the patterning of a still greater archetype, which may cause some reconfiguration in the lower archetype. And so it goes until the archetype of the entire universe is faithfully expressed through all the other standing wave patterns which are determining what qualities express them and what final shape in the world of appearances emerges. Okay, now, we're talking about what the wise student will ponder. So, we have been talking about three things. Are there more than three? Maybe only three. And maybe we can take it this far. Three factors. Third factor, which the wise student will ponder. And we're talking here about the mystery of electricity. Oh, and that is a profound mystery, but it's really the mystery of polarity. So we've already had the inability to conceive of, for man, let's say, man to conceive of that which is beyond the cosmic physical plane. Of course, ideas can be formed, conceptions can be formed, but let's use the word realize instead of conceive. And then the realization that all forms are really symbols. And then third, the mystery of electricity. Okay. Now, the wise student will also ponder well the words, the mystery of electricity, which is the mystery surrounding that process which is responsible for the production of light, and also, therefore, of vibration itself. Now, normally, there is a developmental sequence, and it goes like this, and you've seen it, vibration, light, sound, color. And vibration comes first. So light flashes forth when there is an approximation of the poles, positive and negative. What has this to do with vibration per se? Do the poles vibrate, or does only that which the poles create vibrate? Do the poles vibrate, or does only that which the interaction of the poles produces vibrate? I'm not sure I can answer that question, but it is interesting that light is created from the approximation of the poles, and light is vibration. So until the light, we almost might wonder when the poles approximate, do they first produce vibration or some kind of oscillation between the poles? Anyway, the mystery of electricity, you know, it can get pretty complicated from a fifth-ray perspective, and we only have to look into the world of electronics to realize how very technical this area of mathematics is. And really, we're talking about something far more difficult than that. Just look in any... Just look in the Wikipedia or the Encyclopedia Britannica, and maybe look up the work of Faraday or Steinmetz, or some of the great fifth-ray souls that have worked in the electrical field, and see what their formulas look like, and realize that these rather incomprehensible formulas, these formulas which are comprehensible perhaps only to those who are technically trained, are very simple indeed compared to the occult formulas which underlie them. So the mystery of electricity, the mystery of the relationship between the poles and the vibration thereby produced. So the mystery of electricity is the mystery of the relationship between the poles and of the vibration thereby produced. Produce. We have concerned ourselves in the two other sections primarily with effects, with the results produced through the operation of the subjective side of nature, that alone which the occultist considers and works with, and the consequent production of objective manifestation. So we have considered two-thirds of the whole, subjectivity and appearance, but not yet the living propulsive factor. Now we arrive at the realization that there is a cause, the cause lying behind that which, and the cause is a divine idea propelled toward manifestation by will. Cause, in this case, a divine idea propelled towards manifestation by will. There is a cause lying behind that which has hitherto been regarded as a cause. Subjectivity, the quality, the soul pattern has been regarded as a cause, but this assemblage of qualities itself has been produced. So, for we discover that behind all subjective phenomena, there lies an essentially spiritual incentive. And I would say, if I can just, the incentive to produce a certain pattern of energies, which we call a purpose. This incentive, this latent spiritual cause we're dealing now, this is all about the realm of spirit. This incentive, this latent spiritual cause, is the object of the attention of the spiritual man. Why is this taking place? The why. The why is considered, and it has to do with directionality and with what I would call final configurations and approximations of archetypes. The man of the world is occupied with objective phenomena and that which can be seen, be touched, be handled. Okay, this is more, you know, correlated with the Lemurian phase in a way, or even in some ways with the Aryan phase. The occult student is engaged in studying the subjective side of life, the realm of quality, the forces that produce the forces in all their varieties, which produce all that's familiar upon the terrestrial plane. So, you know, we're studying here rays, constellations, signs, planets. In other words, why these particular forces? Why these arrangements of quality? Why do there exist these arrangements of quality? And these forces and energies fall into three main groups. Forces emanating from the mental plane in its two divisions. So that's the higher mind and the concrete mind, higher mind. Heavenly man, H-G-H, mind. And lower mind or concrete mind. And let's see what this will give us. Do we have higher mind? We certainly should have if we don't. Higher mental, HMD, let's try that. HMD. We'll try that. And see if we can higher mind. So in its two divisions, there is mind and higher mind. The forces of a chemic nature related, of course, no. I see what has to be done. Sorry. Related to desire. And forces of purely physical description, etheric, physical, really. The occult students studies, experiments with, manipulates, and correlates. Through the knowledge thus gained, there comes an understanding of all that can be known in the three worlds, and likewise understanding of his own nature. But why? Not how or what. The what is that which appears. The how represents the qualitative means by which the what appears, and then the why, the objective, the destiny, the final configuration, the fulfillment of the archetype. So, just because we know what energies are there when we look at a human being, I mean, we can tell with their soul or personality what they're demonstrating, why in the great scheme of their purpose as an entity are these energies presently manifesting or presently configured? We know that they will produce the form. But behind the form are the assembled qualities. Let me put this down. Behind the form are the assembled qualities. And behind the assembled qualities is the destiny or final configuration towards which that form and those qualities are intended to lead. All right. I think now we can say that we are at the end of Cosmic Fire webinar commentaries 15A, and maybe we're not going to go any further with this one right now. And let's see our page number. Page 1237, I guess. Yes, that's where we are. Page 1237, and beginning of Cosmic Fire webinar commentaries, 16A, page 1237. Okay. Okay, friends, I think that will be it for the moment, and we'll go on to this discussion of what we must know in order to approach understanding of the realm of spirit. The need to realize that our efforts are confined to the cosmic physical plane, unless we happen to be a Christ or some even greater initiate, that all forms are really symbols of something higher, and the symbols can be exoteric, or they can be pointing towards subjectivity and interpreted subjectively, and they can also point towards cause. And that the mystery of electricity has to do with all that appears. What appears through the poles is light. Everything really is a form of light, and light is vibration. Vibration is fundamental. So when the poles approximate, some sort of vibration is produced. If light appears, and light is vibration, vibration is produced. Okay, so those are the three factors that we have to ponder, and also when we study forces, we realize they are mostly arising from the higher and lower mental planes, from the desire nature, and from the etheric physical planes. We study these, we understand them, how to manipulate them, but we don't know. What we need to know is the purpose. What we need to know is the why. And if I make that really big, you and I and all might just remember it, okay? So let's do that. We need to know the why, which is teleological. It has to do with final ends, final configurations, final standing waves, archetypes, the arrangement intended, the design intended. So the why is about the design intended. All right, well, I went on a little longer, but we'll go on to number 16 now very shortly. See you soon. Bye-bye.